Since it looks like we have a small group today, if everybody wants to move up to the table, it'll make it much easier to discuss things with you. Simla, come on up. Ronald Bites over here, so you might not want to sit next to him, but the rest of the table's still empty. Come on up.
Everybody can. I think we have enough place here on the table, so everybody who's interested can come on and sit at the table if he or she wants.
Okay. If we could please start the recording. Thank you.
Okay, my name is Dirk Krzyżanowski, Vice Chair of the GeoTLD Group, and I welcome all participants in our second session here at the ICANN meeting in San Juan in Puerto Rico. I just wanted to share one slide which was missing with that breaking news about the timeline of the new GTLD program. That was a timeline that was presented at the GNSO meeting. And you see there that Q1 2021 is that application submission period date, where in the best case, but they didn't present any other case, applications may be accepted. And you probably followed around discussion with ICANN financing and the budget and when the next round may start and so on in the last couple of days. So are there any questions on this or comments? Ruben?
RubensQ.Rio. Just remind that this is the absolute best case. So it's really, really optimistic timeline. So there are many challenges, some of those mentioned during the session that was presented. So something more closer to end of calendar year 21, like Q4, is more realistic than the best case. Hope that Jeff Newman doesn't hear me saying that, but sorry to be realistic about this.
Any other comments on that? Okay. Then I have two other housekeeping topics. One is we are doing the new or updated roster of the group, so it would be really good if you could update your information. I think it was sent around, and it would be really good to have an update, especially on the persons who are the principal and the alternate representatives. And then we have for tomorrow, that was coming from Russ Weinstein, a reminder on the session tomorrow between 12:30 and 13:30 in this room here. Contracted Parties House session about GDPR again. So if you are there, that would be, I think, good to come here. So yeah, please, Sue, can you? Yeah. Today we will continue our members exchange on GDPR first, then going to marketing experience and best practice, and I hope I can exchange, or we can exchange in between. And I had some talks with WordPress how to integrate your GeoTLD to their list of available TLDs, and then any other business. Comments to this? Okay. Then we jump into the next slides. We had already some discussions starting on Sunday, and could you please go through the next one with some points on the interim model, then the next one, what the registries and registrars were writing on end of February about GDPR, and then we had the next one. There was the comments by DNS Belgium. Peter luckily explained a bit more in detail. Then the next slide, the slides core, the comments core made. Let's see the next one. And the next one nominates searchable who is, which I don't know if there's an update nominate made here at the ICANN meeting. Doesn't seem so. Okay, please, next slide. Yeah, and what the idea for the session now is to exchange with you all on the different points. I listed here a couple of points, and I would to have a get a feeling of for the group. So all group members should say what they are planning, or I would be happy if they could say what they are planning on the several points. We will take notes, but not with your TLD mentioned. Just a note, we have three members or five members here present in the room closing the WHOIS completely, and three members only showing the email address or something like this. To find a common picture among our activities here, and I think we... I don't know what all the members are doing here. I think it would be really interesting to see what happens there. Is there anything to comment on this procedure, or would you go through with me? I will take notes on that. Then we would start with WHOIS visibility. That's on the next slide. Who wants to start what he is planning to do?
Okay, Volker Greimann, Dot Saarland. We will closely follow the model that has already been implemented by one of our customers, Dot Amsterdam, Dot FRL in this case. Dot Amsterdam is not our customer, but they have the same model as Dot Amsterdam because they're operated by the same operator, not the same backend. So we will hide the data of private individuals, and as we are not able to differentiate at this stage who is private and who is not, in an automated fashion, organizations will also be hidden at first. We will provide an ability to contact the registrant through a web form, otherwise, and we will provide the country of the registrant. That's it.
Okay. To the access points, we will come later, and retention, and when are you implementing? So I noted following the Amsterdam model is one thing members are doing. I think it's the best to make a round just here.
In the case of .Rio, all contacts will remain visible. .Rio is only eligible to citizens of Rio, not only Brazilians, but specific citizens of Rio. So it was decided GDPR wouldn't apply and just keep everything as it was before.
Okay. Lucky, similar?
Apologies, I didn't hear the question. I've been looking at something else.
Yeah, we're discussing. Just wanted to know, what are you doing with your GeoTLDs? Are you following the GDPR models, or will it be like in the case of .Rio, everything as before?
Well, we're still looking at the various models of implementation. The one thing that we're struggling with is understanding that there's this new profile that ICANN is attempting to prescribe in terms of who is, and then trying to marry that or link it to the various models of implementation. We are definitely following the discussions in all the streams, and we've looked at the regulations itself because it does apply to foreign entities that service EU clients, and so we are also subjected to the penalty provisions that seem to be quite excessive. But we haven't come up with a solution at the moment in terms of how we would implement. But we definitely are following the communications, the discussion streams at ICANN.
Thanks. I think for us, we are also looking at a long-term solution, not a band-aid, or to react to what is going to be legislated in the next few weeks or months. So it's also to come up with, a long-term solution, making sure that we are also compliant with our own, you know, privacy issues or privacy policies in the country. And it's a balancing act, you know, keeping that balance, you know, at a global level and at a local level to ensure that we are not found in breach of our own policies and legislations. Thanks.
We are not running a TLD, so we will implement what our customers decide.
Istanbul. We actually, as a country, we I think follow what the European Union countries do, especially on the WHO's data privacy, because our TLD is also implemented by the governmental agency. I mean municipality actually. So we're discussing actually with the ICANN Istanbul office how are we going to go on, and most probably we're going to go with the WHO's privacy implementation by the EU countries.
So I should make a distinction here when I talk about DOCCATs, including DOC Barcelona and all the other TLDs we are working with at CORE. And when it comes to DOCCAT, you know, we are in a very unique position here because the WHO has already a model. And what we are trying to do, and we don't know yet how it is going to unfold in the interaction with the ICANN staff, is to say that we want to keep our model. We don't want the one single model that Joran said in one of the conferences. So we want to keep a stick with the model that we have, that is embedded into our registry agreement. And then we'll see, because we don't know how the balls are going to, you know, be falling. But when it comes to Barcelona, this is the city council, so it's also a very unique position, and we are going to advise them, but they will end up doing what they think it's best. And as for the others, like Toreus or Tocal, for Toreus we've been negotiating with the DPA, and it looked at some point that we were going to be receiving a clear endorsement from the Spanish DPA, quite stronger than the one we had years ago for DOCCAT, because it was more nuanced. But in this case, they seemed bent on going forward. But everything stopped at the moment that ICANN decided to pursue this discussion about the models. So it's wait and see in this case for us. We know that we have the backing of the DPA, but until, you know, we see what happens, I don't think there's going to be any decision on their behalf.
Yeah, I think the same. We're just following what our clients' requirements are, if they're going to implement it, how they're going to implement it, and we'll respond accordingly as DNS Africa.
For the .win registry, we will be, let's say, 99% following the model that the GeoTLD group has developed proposed in Bilbao, in our Bilbao meeting. This is the model that mainly has been driven by Marianne Afnik and Afnik, in person, Marianne and Neustar, hiding various fields of personal data. And it is at about 99% that we are following that.
Dirk Krishnowski for Berlin and Hamburg. It's the same like Ronald said. I think we are not that apart on this. So following the, let's say, Amsterdam EU or GeoTLD model show no visibility of any admin, owner or tech data.
Dot-Quebec's, as it's been mentioned, is in a wait-and-see position right now. So we'll stick to what we have and what our customers have right now. Thank you.
Cedric from Dot Paris. We have a solution. We already previous to implement it on the 25th of May. It's a solution of the .fr that we had since 10 years. How we do it, we will anonymous the personal data of an individual person as soon as the organization data is not completed. It is a possibility today in the GTLD WHOIS. So we will do it to be ready with the European law on the 25th of May. As soon as this organization data is completed, it's public. And we decide to publish the WHOIS data. We already inform ICANN about it, and we already update our RRA and also inform ICANN about it. But we not, for instance, inform our registrars. We tell them, especially here in ICANN meeting, but we are waiting for the agreement of ICANN. It's not a really agreement, it's just the fact that ICANN just will tell us that we will not receive any compliance notice with this model.
May I? Cedric, I may have lost you there, but what you said you're going to do with the RRA, have you started the RRA amendment process with ICANN already?
We send it to ICANN. Yeah, for amendment. And all our customers are informed. BZH sent it to ICANN also. And Alsace will send it, and Corsica also will send it.
Thank you.
We have a common model for French GeoTLDs.
Nina Müller from CNIP, a backend registry operator for several GeoTLDs. And it's as every other backend operator here said, we are actually waiting for our customers to decide. We do have different proposals probably at hand, as there are customers that would prefer different ways.
So, but Dirk Krishnowski, all these customers are in the EU economic area then, or?
Well, several of them were just talking about that they have a different thing in mind, so they were here.
Okay.
So you all of them know actually about that.
Okay, then that was an interesting picture that was with more colors than I thought before. I will put some notes so that I noted, for instance, we have five that follow the Amsterdam EU GeoTLD model. We have two that are visible as before, because of outside EU GeoTLD, some are working on, some stick to the CCTLD model, let's say, some waiting for a final decision of ICANN. So these are the different flavors I noted here. So next slide, please. That's easy to answer, differentiate between public and person data or personal data and organization data. Maybe we'll start with you.
Yeah, I already told it. But, yeah. We differentiate the person and organization data with organization data in the WIS. So as soon as it is completed, it's an organization. As soon as it is not completed, it's a person.
Okay. For Berlin and Hamburg, we will not differentiate because we looked in at our data and thought it doesn't make sense because it's you can't differentiate.
Same here as with Avnik. Differentiation: if the organization field is filled, it's an organization; otherwise, it's a person, and we will differentiate.
In this case, we have some experience with DocCat about what it meant to introduce this differentiation and how the registrars, how that played with the registrars when they were asked to enforce this request to the customers, and it didn't play well. And some of them, by default, just make the selection because we in DocCat request them to indicate whether they are an organization or not, and if they are individual, whether if they want to opt in it. No, it's opt-out, I think, right? I don't remember anymore. But we request them to make that distinction when they are registering the domain name. And it's not easy. And registrars, they make the distinction by themselves. That leads to suboptimal results. But I don't think there's much more you can do because you have to provide the elements and you have to enforce them, but you cannot simply expect all the registrars to do it in the way that you intend them to. And that's what it is.
Dirk Krzyżanowski, a question to that. Is it you said you had you asked your registrars to do it for these registrants which are already there, and do you see a change in the quality of data for the new registrations?
I couldn't say. It was not relevant.
Mm-hmm.
No, perhaps it was a bit more accurate, but that may have just been incidental, not a consequence.
So that would mean for .eus and .gal and .barcelona, you don't differentiate?
We still don't know.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Yasin, .istan, .istanbul. Generally, the CCTLD we have .tr implements differentiation. If it is a company, because they have to present some kind of document. But concerning .istanbul, it's normally there's no requirement for document submission or something. With the new implementations, we will see if what we're going to implement actually, if there's any differentiation or not, because it's just what they actually present in their data. So we will see about that after discussions and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Who wants next?
In the case of .rio, you already hijacked the organization field to express the taxpayer ID, either of a natural person or of a legal person. So the organization already doesn't have the organization name. And because taxpayer IDs in Brazil are different for natural persons and legal persons, we could differentiate that without a doubt. So that would be interesting if when we differentiate that, but so far WHIS output for is equal for both natural persons and legal persons.
Okay.
Yes, Volker Greimert speaking. Brazil is not the only country that abuses the organization field. organization fields are abused by registrants as well for all kinds of information. Sometimes they just put their name again, jump. Sometimes they put some funny information. So the presence of data in the organization field is for us, from our experience as a registrar, different hat, completely unreliable to make that differentiation. We would have to do something outside of who is to make that determination, similar to what, for example, Nominet is doing, where they have a different field that the customer can use to self-identify as whatever the fields available are, one of which would be organization or private individual. So we cannot use the Whois. We would have to implement something else. That would mean that we would have to go through our registrants and tell them that we have a new API command to implement, which they will rejoice at. So we're not doing that either.
Okay. Thanks a lot. We go. If there are no comments to the next question. So the gated access model, it gets a bit more complicated on that term, and I was putting some ideas here to see if especially the access model is more automatic, semi-automatic, or self-certifying, or manual. Which is a strong differentiation. And for that, I talked yesterday to Giovanni Zepia from URID about it, and they are still waiting for the European Commission to make some advice how URID should handle this whole thing, and that should have come already in November, but they are expecting this next week or the other week to come, and they might update their access procedure, which is at the moment manually with paperwork, and we will see how this works out. I think it's interesting for all the parties which are based in the European Union then. Volker.
Well, to make this easy, we will probably implement a gated access model as soon as the ICANN community can agree on such a model. Until that time, your gated access model, it will be is partially sitting in front of you. Partially, the team is still in Germany, so we will have a very restricted model where we say that if you can demonstrate that you have a legal right to access that data, we will give it to you, and that has to be requested on a case-by-case basis, and it will be manually reviewed. I have no idea how many requests we will receive yet. We assume there will be little to none, but anyway, it will be a manual process at the beginning, and we will then phase in a community model once that is developed and approved.
I can speak to what .br is doing, answering the third bullet. Most .br information is accessible by web whois, provided you answer a captcha, including knowing which domains are registered by a specific legal or natural person. The only exceptions to that are somewhat limited to law enforcement, where they bypass rate limits, but they don't get to see more information than anyone else could see by answering a captcha.
Africa and Joburg, Cape Town.
At the moment, we follow a very manual process for access to certain data that's obviously not reflected on the Whois. We haven't looked at anything beyond that for now, but it's a very manual process with justification that's required from the requesting organization, and whether it's, you know, from law enforcement or via a court order or an affidavit from the SAPS, for instance. So very much manual at the moment.
Who's next? Istanbul?
I'm not sure if I get the question correct. Gated access model to whose data? provided?
Yeah, gated or tiered access, how you call it?
Currently it's open. I think anyone can search, can get whose data. And I think the cctld.tr is also doing the same. But we don't know. In the next phase, most probably, it's going to be restricted by the whose data policy. I'm not sure. Now it's open. Anyone who is search appears, as far as I know.
Okay.
What we do is manual, case by case. Since 2012, I don't think we've received more than 10 total. And total. Yeah? Yeah. Really? And it's not because we make it difficult or we look to the other side. You know, we treat every one of them with the same level of seriousness. I mean, IP lawyers as well as law enforcement, as much as we may dislike one or the others, but we treat them and we haven't received more than 10. I'm just making the number out of the top of my head, but I think it's no more than that.
Question for you, Nacho. How many requests did you receive per year?
I couldn't say, Cedric, because we don't even keep track, because we don't see any pattern or enough numbers as to try to discern where's the pattern. We receive one every blue moon, and we just, you know, check and give access. Mostly, yeah, I could say IP lawyers and law enforcement, because you know that when the Court of Justice wants details from a .cat domain name, they ask in a very particular way. So this is given immediately. But in the other cases, I'm sorry, but I don't have, you know, the clear numbers, because they are not enough even to make you know, the effort to make the calculation.
Yeah, Dirk Krasnowski for Berlin and Hamburg. We also looked at the numbers from .fr and other registries, which came up with some relationships, how many requests per million, and we don't have in the 10,000s of domain names, and you can calculate that it's going to be not that much. So we decided also to follow the manual model, which also URIT is having at the moment. I like that with that form, and let's see what's coming there, but we will just go for the manual model. But I'm a little bit fearing, because we don't know at the moment in our open who is how many lawyers and law enforcement daily look there. So, but in most cases, when I got requests from the law enforcement, they didn't even know that who is exists, and I just print out or gave them the address where they can look them for themselves. So maybe there's a hidden a high hidden number of potential requests behind, but we will see.
Let me just clarify one thing. When we receive a request and the data is not available, and we see that it's not an individual, then we make it available. And I'm not keeping track of those, because I don't do it, and we've never found important to keep track of those. So in that case, it may be, I don't know, 20, 30, 50 more. But when we see that it is an organization and it's an abuse of the privacy settings, then we just let it go public.
And how would you do this, let's say, if there's an organization and there's a personal email address from Nacho Armados at whatever company.com or so behind, would you also publish that?
Indeed. The domain name belongs to an organization. Mm-hmm. And when there is an individual representing an organization, the contact details, in my view, are not subject, or were not. That may change with the GDPR, but in the current settings, the Spanish DPA has been very clear, saying that whenever you have a contact address of somebody representing an organization with the phone number, that is not subject to privacy. So if they have provided the personal email address, it's their option. And they can always change it.
I like the sentence, it's a request only at blue moon times.
I don't have much to say about that because Nacho gave the answers and we were working with them. If we were to face such an issue, I think that it would be treated manually. But I didn't have to face that since I'm on the board. You know?
For .Paris, it's manual. It will be manual and automatic as soon as we have an ICANN model.
And the access model is manual or?
So we will have four different kind of access tiers. One is if the owner accesses his own domain, by law we are forced to give him any information that we have stored about him. So if the owner accesses his domain, me as Ronald, I'm accessing ronald.wien, I will get the full information. Authentication will be done by either a link sent to my email box, and I can click on the link, and then I'm qualified as owner, or the auth code the domain has been stored. So the one who has the auth code is the owner, gets the full information. The other extreme on the other side is the whole public, the whole internet. Whenever someone who is not the domain owner accesses or wants to access ronald.wien, he will get the minimum data set that has been defined in the GeoTeal group's model, no name, no street, no address, and some way of contacting me, depending on the ICANN model. It's either a web form or an anonymized email that I can be contacted. And then the remaining two tiers, one is the registrar. A registrar, however he is authenticated, we think it will be a certificate and a whitelisted IP. The registrar will see all the information of all the domains that he had delivered to the registry. Sure, he can check, is the data accurate that I still have on file? And the fourth access tier is the law enforcement bodies that we are not aware how it will work, because this is the discussion ICANN has, or we have here at ICANN 61. For the beginning, it will be a case-by-case handling, and I think it will remain a very long beginning. Yeah, because I can't cope with the model currently proposed by ICANN that the GAC member of any state puts something into a database, and this person then has access to any data of .wien. If he has an issue with a single domain name, he has to contact us, and we will give him all the information we have about that for this very one domain name. But never ever will a law enforcement body of, let's say, Australia, New Zealand have full access to any of the .wien domain names. So this is under discussion, and it will be a manual process for the beginning.
Okay, that's quite interesting that we have quite a majority of GeoTLDs which for the first time and maybe for a long time running a manual model. You brought up that question case by case or general access to the law enforcement. That's we are discussing this internally as well for Berlin and Hamburg, and it looks like it goes more to the case by case model, not the general access model for all the time for all the law enforcement agencies.
Ronald from .wien, we have a, let's say, comparable case with our telecom providers. The telecom providers are forced to give information, let's say, about information about the location, the geographical location of my mobile phone. In former days, police had to provide what's called a touristic document that the telecom provider provided the location. Then the law was changed, and the police could, just by arguing it's necessary, could get access to the position of a mobile phone. Since that time, the demands or the queries to the geographical positions has been 12 or 15 times as high as it's been before, and all these queries must be locked, and they are subject to presentation before the Austrian Parliament and government. Because is it data abuse if I ask my colleague, hey, can you tell me where my girlfriend is currently on Friday afternoon? And it's happening. It's really happening. So an automatic general access for any domain name to even an Austrian data or law enforcement body, I think this will not work.
Okay. Linda?
Linda Müller from CNIP. Just out of curiosity, if somebody requests access to more data than normal, does anybody plan to inform the one holding the domain? It could be that, you know, it's obviously abusing the right to access it. So we kind of have that at different services where we provide other services to companies, and we sometimes get calls where the law enforcement needs some information about who's doing that and that. And most of the times we inform our customers that they will get a phone call in about a minute or so by the police. So.
Ronald, for Edwin, when we developed our policies 4 years before, we had some talk with let's say police, law enforcement agencies, and we exactly asked that question. Said, "And we will tell you whether you are allowed to inform the customer or not, in a case by case situation, because it can be very bad for the sake of the investigation if you warn the customer." Yeah?
Exactly.
So we will focus on the demanding party to prove that it's a legitimate interest to get this information. And then wait for, do we have to do a claim service like the TMCH, or don't we inform the customer?
Well, to get that clear, we also have to at least ask them if we can share that information, of course.
I don't want to go in the row. Can I have a picture, just an opinion picture on the case-by-case access or general access for law enforcement? Who is going to have case-by-case access? Case-by-case. And more general access? Okay, it's open. Okay, that's a good... okay, I can make here... no access. Another question would, in this case where it could be good to have an opinion picture here as well, is are you planning to do, like nominate, a paid access or a self... not self-accreditation, but a fee that you raise for access that is let's say, pays your expenses you have with validating this, giving this to a lawyer or something like this. Someone planning to do that, like Nominet is doing that?
Ronald, for that, I can't imagine issuing an invoice to the police because they are demanding some. Yeah, so whom could I issue an invoice to? Some, let's say, data profiler, etc. And this is exactly what we are not allowed to do. Or, personal opinion, no, never, ever, a fee for giving away data, private data.
Okay, for Berlin, we have some experience with some paid things which cover the expenses we have with it, with a dispute procedure, which is also in our policies, and that's 300 euros. So it's an even more lightweight URS solution to block the domain name, or just to not bring it out of the DNS, just to block the data, and then the complaining party can contact the registrant and so on. And that works pretty fine with 300 euros because it's case-by-case basis, and we have to look if we should put that domain on a certain hold starting.
I don't know yet if we plan to do it for GTLDs, but for .fr we propose the database, the fully database on a daily model with certain conditions, a lot of conditions, for lawyers, registrars, for 10,000 euros per year. 3 million domain names. So yeah, anonymous. As soon as it is anonymous, it's still anonymous, but all the organization, and it's on a daily basis. So lawyers, registrars can make statistics, make the change, and it's something that we proposed since a long time now.
Okay. That's it's not going to be in the protocol.
Dick? Just one word with IT. We just still have this solution that you have access to the zone for and it's paid, but we will stop it with May this year because it is not compliant with the GDPR. So it's very clear that it's again in Austria it is against the law.
Rubens,
in .pr we are planning to provide a service that you could sign up for monitoring of a specific expression. So it is somewhat similar to Nominate of allowing expressions, but it would only allow those specific expressions for legitimate parties. Like if you are a bank, call it Bank X, then you could have monitoring registrations of Bank X names, but that's it. No, otherwise, no unlimited access or anything. Just the monitoring part of what you saw in the Nominate service.
Okay.
I just think that might be considered a new registry service, so we might be required to go through an RCEP process for that. No, I mean the getting paid for data kind of thing. We will consider it if the number of requests becomes so high that it will impact our day-to-day operations, i.e. will take over too much of our time. Law enforcement will, of course, not be charged, but third parties that have certain that profess to have certain interest, we will have some costs attached to validating that, and I think it's justified to cost that if it becomes a burden on the contracted party in that case. That being said, other ways that that third parties would be gaining access to such data, for example, to an IP address of a subscriber of an ISP, they would have to go through court. So any fee we charge would still be cheaper than the normal due process means they would normally have to employ to obtain that data. So it would be cheaper for them.
Yeah, so Dirk Krasnowski, I thought in Germany, if you have an accident with your car and the other party runs away with the car, but you have the license plate number, you can ask the government or send a postal letter to the government, and it costs you 8 euros or so for that request, and then the government decides if they want to give you the data of the other party. So you need to show that you are really a party that is affected by another license plate holder. Then that's one example on a for some payment for data?
In Turkey, by law, any authority has the right to get any data from anywhere. Let's say there is a burglar or something in a market. Any camera recording or anything, they have to provide by law. And any other private data, by getting any permission or document from the court, you could ask that data be provided. About charge, if there's any accident that happened, like you mentioned in Germany, I think in that case, there are some cases that I think they charge just some amount to get that data. Other than that, it will be good to charge also government if the law allows. We will see what's going to happen with data privacy issues later.
Then we might go to the next point, if there are nothing. Registrar who is. So even if the general public who is not available with most of us, there's still the demand from registrars to have that the who is data for transfers and I think mainly transfer purposes. We are not sure if this is really in line with the GDPR, but we want to don't disturb our business, which we are doing with ICANN and all the other parties. So that's a question which remains a bit open for us at the moment. So maybe we can have some picture or opinions on this.
As a registrar, we are very conscious of this issue. We do not expect that we will be able to gain full WHOIS data at the time that we need it, for example, for a transfer. And therefore, that means that we will have to figure out, and there's already talks going on, that how to do transfers and other procedures that require this data in another way. So registrars will not expect to have that data at the time after GDPR becomes enforceable. That being said, registries should also not expect that registrars will be able to furnish them with the full WHOIS data in the first place, because they, of course, are also bound by GDPR. So while you may... we may, as registries, expect that we will have the full data and then mask it and give that data out to third parties, we may not even receive it from our contracted parties, the registrars, because they feel that they are not permitted to give you us the data. Sometimes it's weird wearing that many hats. Okay, but I think I got my point across.
Mm-hmm. Rooms that...
Just remind everyone that there was a letter sent by registries and registrars to ICANN asking for exemption on the FOIA requests, so an email wouldn't be required anymore. Transfers could be done only with authentication codes, not sending email. I don't know if that will prosper or not, but most registrars seem to be willing to wait for that to happen instead of devising a GDPR compliant mechanism to do transfers. I'm not as optimistic as the group, but just saying that almost every registrar out there is counting on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the next, no comment.
So, we, as you might know, with our registry backend provider, are participating in the ARDA pilot. And ARDA provides means that you can do these, for example, transfers, provide these information. We will be able to offer this on May 25th, the possibility to get such data if, as Volker said, we have this data, and if the registrar is willing to access or able to access via RDAP. Yeah? So no idea. Technically, we will have means to provide email other than over WHOIS functionality or the necessary information for transferring. But whether a registrar is capable of using this or not, or if we have the data, if the registrar denies to send it, depends on, let's say, future development.
That doesn't look very optimistic for the maintenance of our services on both sides, on the registrar side and on the registry side. So that 25th maybe for all our transfers and sales as well. We do a critical day then. Okay, then we go to the next point. Was it? Yeah. What do you do with the escrow data, the BRDR, the CZDS? Yeah. But what's your take on this? Because you give data to different parties, the registrars to ICANN and to the registries to ICANN and maybe we'll start with you.
For instance, we stay on the same process. We are focused on the WHOIS and the data process for our TLD, and then we will study all this access. Our opinion is that for escrow, yes, there is still a discussion with ICANN, with GDPR, that the data could be sent to US in case of any issue. It's a discussion. For the other point, it's the same thing. For CZDS, for instance, we do not authorize permanent access. We are on a one-year process, and that's it.
Thank you. Linda?
Linda from CNIP. I think for the escrow part, most of our customers will most likely change to a European provider. That's what we expect.
For Dirk Krasnowski for Berlin and Hamburg, we will stick to the current processes and not change anything at the moment. So let's wait what I can brings up there. But I followed the discussion in the morning where it was a force of back of by JJ if ICANN is a controller or not, and I was quite confused what was going on there on the ICANN field, but I'm hoping this will sort out in the next couple of months.
Ronald Fodert-Wien, I'm absolutely confident that we do need a full escrow, data escrow, to be able, for example, change a back end provider or recover a registry out of an escrow. So we definitely will do the full escrow, as much as data as we have, proceed with the procedures that we have in place now. We have already changed our escrow provider to a European-based one who guarantees us that it is storing or he is storing data according to the necessary laws, retention time not 24 months but 12 months. They have these obligations or these possibilities. So escrow is not an issue that I'm focusing on. CCDS itself is not a real issue because there is nothing in CCDS that could be GDPR problem. It's the domain name and it's the name servers. As long as you don't have
the email that belongs to this domain, to this registered domain name, giving away CCDS is not the problem. And if we somehow close this information in the Whois, I think CCDS is also not that problem that it is today.
Maybe I ask Martin. He's from Fieldfisher. What I see, the CZDS data are not the problem. It's themselves, but you are accessing data of all those people, hundreds or even thousands different people with all their private data partly as well in the CZDS system. We were not storing them, but you have access to these data. And I don't know, what's your take on the CZDS?
Martin Lose, Fieldfisher. Thanks, Dirk. Actually, I must confess that I'm not too familiar with the CZDS data. So maybe you could give me some more detail about what data is actually stored there and what is done with it.
CCDS data is the domain name, the name server. That's it. Of all the domains of a zone.
Yeah, we are on a daily basis sending these data, domain name and name server, to ICANN. And there's an ICANN platform where any party can request access to that zone file. And there are hundreds of different persons and organizations asking us for access. You go to that platform and you see the data, if they are complete, of the requester, and then say yes or no, access or no access, and that's it. But in that platform, you have access to all these data of the registrants, of the requesters there.
And it's just the domain name and the DNS server, right?
No, yeah, just the data we give to ICANN. But at the platform at ICANN, we can see all the data of all the requesters.
It's actually the domain name, the name servers, and the IP addresses connected to the name servers, I guess. Isn't it?
Yeah.
So that is... in my view, no personal data.
So as long as there is no personal data involved, of course, we have no GDPR compliance problem here. But the domain name might be seen as personal data in some...
It's an easy way to get personal data involved. Yeah? I download or I take the zone file of yesterday. I take the zone file of today. Get the differences, which is, for example, 10 domain names. I use these 10 domain names, go to Whois, the combination, and then I have 10 domain names being registered yesterday, and send a spam or whatever product offer email to these 10 persons. Concerning the domain name you registered yesterday, if you want to take full advantage, you have to pay another $160 to this bank account to be listed in this and that directory. Happens every day. Every day. It's not the CCDS file itself. It's the combination of the Whois and the CCDS. And we have multiple customers who paid this 160, 180, 240, or whatever euros. Yeah? So CCDS is not the issue as long as the Whois is not there.
Yeah, exactly. This is what I would say. The problem is more what data is accessible for what party in the Whois, and it's not what data is stored in the CZDS file. Yeah.
But there is one thing that I think Dirk was mentioning, is that there is also the data of the requesters of that information, like names of those persons requesting access, email addresses. And so how one does handle that personal data is possibly subject to GDPR. Not the Zoom data itself, but names, addresses, and reasoning of those data. But I suggest any European registry to ask any CZDS requester, how does that request comply with GDPR? For reasoning, say, hey, if you don't say why you comply with GDPR, you deny your request. So that would probably be fun.
No, what go do? We live with them. what do you do? Cesar Diaz is just a. it's a horrible mechanism, you have to go along with the other ones. You cannot do anything. Otherwise you will be in breach.
Okay, then we go to the next point. I think there are a few ones. So the retention time of any data you have, I think I can suggest it 24 months when I'm right. Would be interesting how this complies to GDPR, or what do you think about this? Volker?
Retention time for what data you mean? Escrow data. Currently, we're at 2 years. We are looking at if we need to reduce that or not. It's basically what we think is what we have implemented at this time. We have not really yet considered what would be reasonable, as basically the retention time is a very arbitrary time of determining what is still reasonable in with respect to the business needs of these data files as opposed to the interests of the data subjects. So 2 years may probably be a bit long. 1 month may be a bit too little. So we'll probably find a number somewhere in there and ask ICANN to approve that.
Okay. Ronald?
We spoke to the Austrian DPA that were complaining about the 24 months defined by ICANN, and they said that 12 months would be okay with them, and our data escrow, the European one, has already limited to 12 months, so I think this should be fine. And the registrars, by the way, the German Austrian registrars have got a waiver that they are allowed to store, I think, 12 months, if I'm correct.
Okay, if there are not any, so we have only 20 minutes or so left, and we have some more points. I'm rushing through the next slide. So could you please? Then was a question, when do you implement these things? Because 25th of May is a Friday. And if you implement and wait for the weekend, it could make some headache. So we thought for Berlin and Hamburg to implement this on Tuesday in that week. And so that we have some time to Friday, until Friday, to fix things that could potentially happen. So what's your take on this?
Lina for Knip. Well, we have a golden rule. You never deploy on Fridays. Nevertheless, in this case, if our customers show up pretty late and there are things to do in the last couple of hours, we might have to deal with that on Friday. I don't know.
Since most of GDPR were already European directives, if I was in Europe, I would deploy them next week instead of waiting until May.
Don't quote me on that, but we will do it whenever we are ready or whenever we feel ready. And let's suppose it's the Tuesday. If ICANN recognizes that, for example, we don't display any name of a person or email or whatever, so that we are not compliant, we will get a compliant notice, and we are allowed to answer, I think, the next 7 or 8 days. And this will be the Wednesday, June 3rd or whatever. And then we are in operation, and then it's okay. Yeah? So being 5 or 6 days advance of that time gives you probably a compliance case, but then you just sit there idle, wait until the 25th is over, and then say, hey, what are you complaining about? It's exactly what has to be in place on May 28th. It's about gaming a little bit ICANN's rules, but we will act that way. When we are ready, we will deploy and not take or not be somehow afraid of getting a compliance notice in these 4 or 5 days if we get one. I hope that ICANN will not send out such compliant notices the 2 or 3 days before that effective date.
ICANN said that they wouldn't send any compliance notice starting some month ago or so. If anyone gets a compliance notice, please notify the executive committees of the GOTLG group and the registry stakeholder group, because we'll just jump on ICANN's throat for that.
Okay, Volker?
First of all, the 25th of March is a Sunday, but...
Yeah, yeah.
It's May.
May,
I know. Yeah. we will implement, when we're done with the implementation, that will probably mean somewhere in the first or second week of May. We will not wait for May 25th, because that will mean we will still have some time to make changes, modifications to the live system, where we see that there's still something that doesn't work as intended, to make sure that we are compliant by May 25th. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Then the next question is, what does your CCTLD do? And is it the same model you're applying? Is it the same access model? Is it the same timeline? So is it much different or less different?
Yeah, Cedric from .Paris. The .fr will be exactly the same model, exactly the same. So no big surprise.
Okay. Richard. So Quebec and .ca, what's the take on this? Same model or different models?
So a couple comments. First of all, we don't think it's very likely that we'll be subject to GDPR, so we're kind of not ignoring the what's going to happen, but not paying as close attention as perhaps all of you are. Secondly, for years and years and years and years and years, we've always only published the name of the registrar for a personal registration, a personal domain registration. We've never published personal information of any kind. And we use the organization field as part of the validation process to determine that a registration is for a company as opposed to an individual. Having said that, we also know that what's likely to happen out of this whole process is there will be some common best practices, if you will, that I think all registries are going to end up adopting. And so we're watching it from that context in support of .kiwi and in support of .sx and what they're doing, and where we would have to be compliant with a G model anyway on the delivery of their specific requirements. But we have enough flexibility in the way the platform works that we could pretty much do anything.
Okay. Thank you. Voices to that? More opinions?
I don't have comments on CCTLD.
Oh, okay. Okay, then I think we are done with the questions, or do you have more questions we should make an opinion picture on?
Besides GDPR?
No, I mean GDPR-related questions.
No questions related to GDPR.
Another question?
Another point. If we're done with GDPR, are we done?
Yeah, then I would say we're done with this kind of... Volker?
Just one question. When do you intend to inform your registrars of what your actual plan is?
What for?
On the Sunday of March 25th.
Okay, I can wait 2 weeks.
Okay. Thanks, folks. We will put that in the protocol, so the opinion pictures here. That was quite nice to see how this works out here. And then we would come to the next point, marketing experience. So I had some talks with WordPress. Maybe we can have the next slide on how to integrate your TLD there. And Kelly from WordPress said, first of all, they have of all the domain names which are extra chosen to the third level, WordPress.com gives you all the names they register, like the .blog and others. They have a 90% plus usage rate, and out of this is 85% immediate use after the domain name or the WordPress web is published. That's amazing high number of active domain names. So if you looks like if you have a domain name registered with WordPress, it's one of these active domain names you want to have in your zone. And she said also that domain names need either to fit into their payment plans, which are between $48 and $300. That's, I think, the business plan. Then she can give you only .com like fees, so would mean $8 or $10 or something like this to have them integrated in that annual plan. So if you have an $48 plan, then she would pay or WordPress would pay $10 to you, even if your general price is higher to the registrar, or you can choose to have a standalone purchase on your regular price. That would mean, let's say, if you have 20 euros to the registrar, then they charge the registrant as extra price, maybe $49 or something like this. So that's another option you can choose. If you have the first option, so the domain name fits in that payment plan, then WordPress said they would offer you a ICANN compliant RRR solution. That means we all need to treat all registrars equal, and that must be given also if you give a discount to WordPress, so that your name fits into this plan. That was quite interesting. And she also said that if GeoTLD, they are working on this, they have implemented at now .Wales and .Miami. If the GeoTLD is requested or WordPress web is requested from a geolocation, which they can locate by IP, then a GeoTLD domain name or the GeoTLD domain name will preferred listed with WordPress. So that's what I got. Rup?
I didn't quite get how we could still abide to the non-discriminatory conditions for registrars and still give them differentiated pricing.
Yeah, that's a good question. So she's not here, but I can put in the protocol her email address, so you might contact her on an individual basis. Then
by she, do you mean Erica Barlesi?
It's Kelly Peterson from WordPress. Volker?
Yes, putting my registrar hat on again, I just wonder how this would be implementable on the registrar level, because if you offer a lot of different TLDs, then having some TLDs that offer this WordPress solution and some that don't is a bit troublesome, I think. So it might be better to have a solution that would be implemented by WordPress on the registrar level, so they could offer that for all their TLDs, not just the GeoTLDs.
So yeah, that's I'm really not sure how big the impact is if you are listed with your GeoTLD domain name at WordPress. I can't say. She couldn't give me numbers on that. And I just will provide with the protocol then the contact data, and you can talk to her individually. Yeah. Richard?
Maybe just to provide some clarity, if I interpret this right, and to answer Volker's question, I think this is a registrar solution where WordPress is, in fact, the registrar, right? So if somebody comes to the WordPress site, mm-hmm. they look for a name, and if that's geolocated with IP and all that kind of stuff, then WordPress will provide a .ca domain name. The problem with the registrar model where a registrar offers WordPress as one of their alternatives in a hosting scenario, the customer at that point already chosen their domain name. So regardless of whether WordPress at that stage would offer up something different, it's likely that in the shopping cycle, they've already bought their domain name and they've already been shown whatever other alternatives that registrar does, or that hosting provider, if it's just a hosting provider.
Yeah, I think a .com domain name is already in that plan in that whatever all over business premium plan, and you would pay an extra for an extra expensive geo domain name then. Okay, then let's go to the next point. I try to figure out in regards of premium domain names that we don't have some proper lists, let's say, where other parties can see that GeoTLD domain names are quite valuable. You find here and there some announcement that some GeoTLD names have been sold for this or that price, but there's no source where you can find a lot of information about the names. So, and I think we all want to have any registrants perceive GeoTLD domain names have a high value, like ccTLDs, let's say, maybe not like .com, but like ccTLDs. And my thought was to have some list of the, let's say, the top 100 GeoTLD sales that have been made with a price. These prices are from Zido and some other sources on the web, which are publicly available. But let's say we in Hamburg and Berlin have made a lot of sales, which were EPP sales, which are not public then, also by registrars via EPP, and only some Zedo names are available, like here via .berlin, but not some higher sales. What do you think about to having such a list? No opinion on that, Rubens?
I would say nice to have.
Okay.
It's very curious what's worth more in each city of the world. So in London, it's rooms. In Miami, it's personal injuries. So curious of different cultures in different world cities.
Well, if you think that's interesting, you probably should at least use the same currency so you can compare directly. I think of our customers, probably they're interested in any information about how others price and how they do with that, so for sure.
Michael?
I don't know if placing such a list on your website as a registry to advertise for your domain will attract the right kind of customers. I mean, the customers that are really interested in these sales prices are domainers, and domainers are not likely to use the domain name that they're registering. And at least for our case, .saarland, we'd much rather have a domain name registered and being used than having a domain name registered and being parked.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Richard?
Many of you will probably remember that I have a long history in the secondary market. And I have two lists in front of me right now from the London Charity Auction and the New York City Charity Auction. And the high ones on those two, for example, were marijuana.nyc that sold for a little over 60,000 US. And the high one you've almost got right on London, it was flats.london that sold for 16,400 US. Now, going to Volker's question, it's true that a lot of the people that are really interested in these numbers are the domainers and the investors and so on. But the knowledge of the secondary market and the knowledge of the value of the domains in the secondary market is important to create value for our strings. So even when somebody is looking at going out and having a platform on, say, let's say, .veen, for example, if he sees in the local paper that a good .veen name sells for $2,000 or 2,000 euros or whatever, there's an implicit value that's placed on having a .veen name as a result of that, for example. And so I think having the information, especially where it can be made public, is very valuable. Now, having said that, most of the people that go into these transactions have no interest in making that information available to the public. So getting it is going to be very difficult.
Cedric?
Yeah, I think a list could be interesting to share in the group, especially the top 100 of the domain name to not forget. It could help the group. After that, you have specialty, macaron in Paris. So, so I think the group can't think to so that just the city of Paris is able to think to this domain name. But yeah, just to focus on the premium program of .Paris, on the .Paris, we are, yeah, the premium program is growing. We have a lack of communication, but the premium program is pretty good. We renew the domain name on the creation fee. So it's quite expensive, but we are growing, so it's good thing.
Okay, I have the take home message that there's not an overwhelming majority of having such list at the moment. When I'm right. Ronald?
Ronald for .veen. I don't know where this information Eigentumswohnung Wien is coming from. It doesn't come from us. If we sell a premium domain name on a per person or per entity basis, we never ever did publish the data their domain has been sold for because the people or the companies do not want it. We offer fees extension for premium names, and the registrars that have it can put an add a top-up or whatever. So if you're going to a registrar who supports this fee extension, you can see that, for example, I don't know, sex.veen would be sold for 2,500 euros plus the markup or the top-up of the registrars on a one-time and a regular yearly basis or whatever the definition is. So anyone who wants to use or buy a domain name can see it. I would not get the okay from a premium customer to publish this data.
Okay, Linda?
Quick question about that. I think on Sunday you discussed the KPI for, and I think it was actually you that said you would be interested in having information about what prices have been paid in that stuff. So I thought actually you would also be willing to at least share it around the group. So
this is the next, Ronald for .veen. This is the other thing. I'd like to have the experiences. Where should we price our premium names? So we talked with .Paris some 2 years before. We were, I think, have we been 5 or 8 times as high as you were at that moment? Currently, we are at exactly the same price. We have 4 tiers, create 100, renew 100. This is the one. Then 250, create and renew, thousand and thousand, and then the super premiums, which is 2.5 or something like this. We sold two domain names for 1,000 and renew 1,000. We sold at about 25, 35, I don't know the exact number, at 250, but we sold some 100 at 100. So I think 100 as a create fee, registry to registrar again, not end user price. And the renew price seems to be somehow acceptable to a better name, to a registrant. Going higher is very, very, let's say, critical. It reduces the number of sales by at least a factor of 10. Yeah? And I would like to have the group sharing information. What prices are you confident that you can sell? But then again, I think Durban will have a different price limit than London or Paris or Vienna has. Probably just people willing to spend 250 euros in Paris is probably not a problem, but in Durban, $250, euro, whatever, I don't think that it will, that you can just compare numbers. You have to take this in account also.
Sue said me we have only we're done. Maybe we have one more slide that's with the any other points.
We have to end the technical services. Yeah. The guys in the back. So we got to end the recording and all that.
Okay.
Sorry.
Yeah, you have a point, but we can do it without technical services as well.
Okay, yep. Natalie, we can end the recording and all that, and the guys can go. But they want to still continue to meet. Is that fine? Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, okay, Luis.
Yes, a while ago, you've been talking about lowering some fees. Some of the GOTLDs were asking for that target, that amount of money that ICANN's asking on a yearly period.